Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani on FUBAR Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to this week's edition of Politics Uncensored. We are live on FUBAR Radio, and this week I am joined by the brilliant Matilda Melanson, freelance journalist who specialises on immigration, politics and human rights. She's reported for The Guardian, The Independent, The New Statesman, The Financial Times, and was the co-presenter of an award-winning podcast, Media Storm, which will be returning for a third season this May. Matilda's also been a guest presenter on The Guilty Feminist. Matilda, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome to Politics Uncensored.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
We have a very interesting show today with some exciting guests, but a little bit depressing. We're talking about how low politics can get. Over the last couple of weeks, we have seen everything from Suella Braverman doing Suella Braverman things, and now we have Labour even going as low as the Conservatives. So the first story we're going to talk about today is Suella Braverman and her comments around grooming gangs. If you will have seen on Sophie Ridge, Suella was talking about grooming gangs and specifically commented and pointed finger at British Pakistanis, which is a very, very common racist stereotype. Matilda, did you get a chance to have a look at that interview and see the fallout from that?
Yeah, unfortunately, I did. And I think it's getting pretty terrifying, the willingness with which this government is happy to fire up racial hatred in order to cling onto power. And this is just another example of that. But maybe the more disturbing thing is that this isn't just flippant irresponsibility. This is a calculated, tried and tested strategy. They've clearly decided that it is politically intelligent for them to go out and stir up these sentiments based on very little evidence. And the sad thing is that this isn't a reflection of Suella Braverman actually wanting to take serious action about sexual assault and child molestation. Because if we look at the policy history, this government hasn't been doing that effectively at all. But politics today apparently is nothing to do with policy. It's about packaging. It's about positioning. And that's what this government is trying to do.
Yeah, it seems like, look, I think over the last year specifically, the Conservatives have obviously decided to me we're not going to win the policy debate. So it's about, can we drag Labour into a fight in the gutter? Because we'll beat them. We'll go further than they're willing to go. Mm. And can we talk about things like, it all seems to be culture wars and racism, really, because we've seen them attack trans people, for example. We've now seen them talking about, we've seen the stuff around the boats, which has been horrific, attacking the most vulnerable people, refugees who are travelling across the sea to get here for a better life and for safety. And now they are delving into what is one of the most common racist conspiracy theories, mm-hmm. that you know, Muslims, British Pakistanis specifically, are grooming, raping and assaulting young white women.
Yeah, you said it there with conspiracy theories. That's something that really strikes me, is these tactics have long been used and still are used by extremists on the fringes of politics, by far right, even far left groups, to actively target vulnerable, dissatisfied people and recruit them to extremist causes. This tactic of demonizing in a very conspiratorial way, often the most marginalized groups. And what's scary is now that we're seeing that fringe practice really come into the mainstream and really shape what our center politics looks like. And the groups you've mentioned, you said trans people, refugees, and Pakistani men in this instance, it's the same rhetoric happening again and again. It's labeling these groups as threats to our women, our children, pedophiles. It's really just a trope. And these are exactly the tactics used by far-right recruiters, and now we are seeing them enter mainstream politics.
Yeah, and look, they have real-world impacts. That's predominantly what worries me. There isn't one day where I don't tweet something or put something out and I don't get the grooming gangs stuff underneath it, mm. or in the general Islamophobia that exists in our politics. But we're also now seeing people being attacked on the way home from mosques. Again, predominantly South Asian people being attacked. So on a few occasions killed on the way home from mosques, particularly during Ramadan. We've also seen two MPs murdered in the last few years with the rise of political violence. So surely these politicians, whether it's Braverman, whether it's Starmer, whoever it is, and we've had Boris and Trump who really laid the ground for this, they know that this all has real world impacts.
Mm. Yeah, they should. They should know. I mean, when you have a hyper-polarized dialogue, it leads to a hyper-polarized society. Our identities are being formed less based on, you know, ultimately we're a community. We're a shared community. We all really want the same things when it comes to issues like protecting children from harm. But we're being forced to take camps based on little more than tribalism. And I think that the media has a lot of responsibility in this respect, because it's the wildest, most unfounded or most controversial claims that get the most traction with the media. It's not the stories about people walking home from mosques and getting attacked. I don't see that coverage. But I see a lot of amplification of stories like, you know, the grooming gang, the very high profile grooming gangs news that has happened in the past that has implicated certain ethnic groups, even though the data shows that these ethnic groups are not disproportionately represented among
offenders. But that's the thing,
isn't
it? I think even in the Sophie Ridge interview, I think it was Sophie Ridge, where Suella Braverman made these comments, that Sophie told her that the data suggests that it's not predominantly South Asians, Pakistani men that are committing these crimes. It's people from white backgrounds. The data suggests the predominant numbers are from white backgrounds. And she completely skirted over that and went straight back to Pakistan.
It doesn't matter. It's just not what gets traction. In the way that our media works today, the way that social media works today, the way that politics is shaping all of that, it's just not what gets traction. You know, the lie spreads so much more easily than the truth. And once it's out there, it's hard to come back.
And so the strategy seems to be, let's pull Labour down into the gutter and we'll beat them because we'll go further than they're willing to go.
Maybe a more successful strategy than their strategy on actually tackling
assault. Doing things is out of the question. So I understand from an intellectual, not a moral or emotional perspective, but an intellectual perspective, I guess what the Conservatives are doing, saying we'll go into the gutter and Labour won't follow us there. But this week, Labour said, hold my beer. they put out an ad, and I'm going to read it verbatim because I could not believe that this was written, drawn up, approved, and posted by the Labour Party. It says, Do you think adults convicted of sexually assaulting children should go to prison? Rishi Sunak doesn't. Reactions.
Look, the poster is pointing to a very real problem that exists in society, and it's saying, oh hey, the reason this problem exists is because Tories are paedophiles, is because Rishi Sunak is a sympathizer with child molesters. Like, this, what this does is just degrade our intelligence as a society. Once you step down to that level of speaking to the population as if we're five-year-olds having tantrums, it's then really hard to have the necessary adult conversation about why is this policy not working? Because it isn't about the person, Rishi Sunak, thinking that child molestation is okay. It's about the policy. And I'm not, you know, for me, the issue isn't, I've seen commentators saying, oh, it's not okay for an ad campaign to hold Rishi Sunak personally accountable for policy that's been in place since before he's prime minister. I don't agree with that. I think, you know, leaders are in the position to make changes and they have to own accountability for these problems. But that's very different to saying that he sympathizes with child molesters. I mean, that's just cheap.
That's the question, isn't it? Because I think what Labour have been saying is they're holding the Conservatives to account on their record with criminal convictions. The problem is that's not what the ad says.
No.
The ad doesn't say that the Conservatives have allowed people who have been convicted of sexually assaulting children to go free or criticising the conviction rates. The ad very specifically said that Rishi Sunak does not think that adults convicted of sexually assaulting children should go to prison.
Yeah, and Labour on this, Labour's trying to have their cake and eat it too, because they're saying, no, you know, this is a needed campaign because it holds politicians personally accountable. They're saying, oh, we're not descending to that level of rhetoric. But you look at the ad and you are descending. They have literally played into this, you know, this tribalist, populist, political game that the Tories have started. They're leaning in and then they're sitting at the mic saying, no, this is an adult criticism. This is a viable criticism. It's just like, no. Like, you've fallen.
And the question, I think, is specifically around the racial elements of this ad, which I don't think has been spoken about. The advert has been widely criticized from across the political spectrum in the media, right, left. And I think even the reports were that Yvette Cooper, the Shadow Home Secretary, was distancing herself from the ad. There's been a bit of a split. Some of the Shadow Cabinet couldn't run further from it and trying to distance themselves. Some really doubling down. And we'll talk about the doubling down specifically from Keir Starmer himself. The question for me is, if this Prime Minister hadn't been from South Asian heritage, does this advert get put out? Because it absolutely is in line with what Suella Braverman is saying. Yeah. They both know what they're doing. It's this idea that there is a problem with sexually assaulting children and grooming gangs within the South Asian community.
Yeah.
And for me, it is unforgivable that we have the first Prime Minister of South Asian heritage, no matter what party he's from, and the Labour Party, the party that claims to be the anti-racist party, is putting something that is so clearly to me, and anyone who's ever been affected by this sort of stuff, the Islamophobia, the racism, is dog whistle racism.
When you say that, that is actually, that's quite emotional. You're right. This is the first Prime Minister from a South Asian background, and his face is on a poster with this comment. Actually, what you've just shown is how this political game, it's a spiral to the bottom, because once the Tories have decided that it's okay to demonize an entire demographic for, you know, culturally not adhering to British values and wanting to protect children, then it's also okay for the opposition to do the same, and no one can really claim the moral high ground. No one can come out and say, oh, that's a racist poster.
Yeah.
You know, there's no voice speaking out against that.
It's a race to the bottom. I mean, I've heard Labour, I mean, since the advert has come out, I think the leadership has doubled down on it. They said, we're not going to pull our punches anymore. We are holding them to account. The problem is that this has very real world impacts on the rest of us. And where is the political courage? Anyone who's been listening to the show in the last couple of weeks will know that this is a theme I keep picking up on. If our politicians just reflect the very worst of us in these moments, how can we ever expect to lift our society out of racism, out of sexism, out of, you know, some of the worst ills? If the Labour Party is going to reflect the worst of British society back simply to win power, then what chance does that leave the rest of us?
No, you're right. The politicians are shooting themselves in the foot by playing this game, because what they're doing is they're stirring up anger, but they're not addressing any of the root causes of that anger. And so we're just going to get angrier and angrier and angrier. You know, it comes down to this decision or this discovery that politicians have made based on, and this is based on, you know, real focus group work that they've been doing over the past decade and more, that it's easier to win over people through tribalism than through actually implementing long-term intelligent policy changes. And so our lives aren't going to get better as a result of this. I mean, on top of the polarization and the hate crimes and the real rise in radicalization that we're seeing as a result of this, I'm actually doing an investigation on this on the next season of the podcast. You can actually see far-right extremism and violent terrorism rising as a result of this. But on top of that, none of the root issues that are causing this dissatisfaction are being addressed, because politics is just not about policy anymore.
And the bit that bothers me is, it's not like there isn't a million and one tap-ins to attack this Conservative government on. The NHS has one of the largest waiting times it's ever seen, with 7 million people strong waiting to get seen by a doctor. We've got the biggest housing crisis we've ever had, specifically in London and urban areas, places like Birmingham, Leeds and Manchester. We have the police now, there's reports of institutional racism and sexism within the police. There are, the economy is growing at the slowest rate even of Russia, who's been hit by sanctions, and we're now looking to avoid a recession. There are a million and one things to attack the Tories about. Mm. Why would you pick this one?
Because it makes headlines, you know? because controversy is clickbait. And yeah, you're right. We could be talking about those things, but, you know, and another, I mean, it's not that it's not an important issue that that child sexual abuse is rife and that we have a terrible criminal justice system when it comes to catering to this problem. That's a real issue that they could criticize. But they're saying, oh, it's because, you know, Rishi Sunak holds this belief. It's not that. You know, maybe it's because the Tories are too busy pinpointing the blame on British Pakistani men than on their own leadership, but it's not that.
I've got no time for Rishi Sunak whatsoever, right? I think he's one of the worst prime ministers we've had and are going to have, certainly in my lifetime. Even his most ardent haters and critics wouldn't tell you that he doesn't think people who've convicted of sexually assaulting children shouldn't go to prison. Mm. They wouldn't say that. Well, listen, now we have another guest. We've got Gurinder Singh Josan, member of the Labour's National Executive Committee and chair of Hope Not Hate, joining us. We're going to speak to him after this.
FUBAR Radio presents
one of my favourite bands all time. It's Drenge. Owen and Rory, how you doing?
Hello.
Hi, Joey. You're right.
What was the first band that you ever was in a mosh pit to?
Our teacher's band. He was in a band called Bromhead's Jacket, and he was our ICT teacher. I think I was about 14.
Pretty heavy going.
It was terrifying. Most of the gig, I was off my feet.
What kind of a IT teacher is that?
Great teacher, yeah.
Well, not a great teacher.
No, he was a great teacher. Great, I think, guy. We had like an hour-long lesson with him once where he just talked about William Wallace. Yeah, he was pretty chill.
He did nothing. He literally did nothing. There wasn't a lesson plan.
Every Wednesday from 2 p.m. on FUBAR Radio. FUBAR Radio presents Ian
Molesworth. Johnny Vegas is in the studio. This morning, I lost 20 minutes thinking, what would I do if an ostrich came in again? And that's 20 minutes I'm never getting back.
What would you do?
My first instinct was, I'd try and bring it down with my shoulders, my upper body strength and some laces.
Right, OK.
Then I thought maybe I'd tie two trainers together and do a... You know, go for the ankle.
That was hurting, yeah.
Bring it down. That's like good. An
attack. Yeah. If I did manage to capture it, whose neighbour's garden would I let it free in? Why must I get stuck with this bloody ostrich?
Every Monday,
Ian Boltsworth.
From 4 p.m.
FUBAR Radio.
Welcome back. So we have a bit of an issue with Gurinder joining. So he's having some technical issues online. So we're going to get back to him in a second. Matilda, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit more about this investigation that you're working on than the next series of your amazing podcast.
Yes, so on MediaStorm, which is the podcast that I host, we try to take a different approach to covering the news, and that is largely by focusing on the testimonies of people with lived experience. Often there are certain groups that are reported on all the time, and yet you never hear their voices in that reporting, whether it's refugees or trans people or people with disabilities. It's just seems as though the first rule of journalism is forgotten. These voices are just not included. And so we've done two seasons of that. And now for our next season, we're branching out into slightly more uncharted territory. And I'm doing an investigation into far-right radicalization. So we're speaking to a lot of people who have been radicalized and have been susceptible to that, who have maybe reformed, about what the root causes behind that radicalization are. Because unless we can actually individualize, if we can humanize this discussion, we're never really going to get to the bottom of it. And one of the most interesting things that I've seen is the relationship between what is happening in our mainstream political discourse and in our mainstream media and what far-right recruiters are using to actually turn people towards violent extremism. And that'll come into a lot of what we're talking about on today's shows. Suella Braverman's comments in particular, I don't know if you remember, but in October last year, she decided to call the arrival of small boats on the English Channel an invasion. And exactly at that time, when we saw a spout of polarizing headlines about that, exactly at that time, a man called Andrew Leake made a petrol bomb and launched it into an immigration center in Dover. And the conversation that didn't happen after that was, how did Suella Braverman's and how did the mainstream media's headlines directly cause this terrorist attack? Because there is a digital footprint, and if you trace it, you can see the clear radicalization of Leake, the man who did this attack, and how those headlines, and that invasion comment fed into it. So we'll be tracing the story of his radicalization in that episode.
Amazing, and I'm sure everybody will be looking forward to that. That'll be on the award-winning podcast Media Storm. We are now joined by Gurinder Singh Josan, member of the Labour Party National Executive Committee. Gurinder, thank you so much for joining us via Zoom. We've been talking today about the advert put out by the Labour Party around convicted people who've been convicted of sexually assaulting children. I've seen that you have retweeted that ad. Do you believe that Rishi Sunak doesn't think that people convicted of sexually assaulting children should go to prison?
I do, and I think first of all, thanks, Ali, for inviting me on. I do. I think actions speak louder than words. Rishi Sunak is somebody who was elected to Parliament in, I think, 2015. Most of his career, most of that time, he's been in ministerial office, and most of that time in very high ministerial office, including currently as Prime Minister. And voters, I think, generally agree that adults who are convicted of sexual abuse against children should go to prison. And voters expect their elected representatives and those in government to put the policies in place to ensure that that does happen. And voters expect the opposition to hold the government to account. And that's what the Labour Party is doing.
Look, I think there's a clear difference between the conviction rate and holding the party and the Prime Minister to account on the conviction rates, and then an advert that says he personally doesn't think that people convicted of sexually assaulting children should go to prison. In the same way, I don't think anybody would say, you know, that Rishi Sunak doesn't think people who are sick should see a doctor. You can certainly criticize him on the waiting lists of the NHS, but there's nobody saying that Rishi Sunak doesn't think that people who are sick should see a doctor. In what way is it acceptable to say that the Prime Minister doesn't personally believe that people convicted of sexually assaulting children should go to prison? It's a completely different thing to talk about conviction rates, and I would be with you if you were criticizing that, but this is a personal attack saying that the Prime Minister doesn't believe that these people should be convicted, should go to prison.
But I don't think you when you're Prime Minister of the country, I don't think you can divorce or separate out your own personal beliefs from the policies you are enacting. You are there as a Prime Minister or whatever high office you hold in a government. I don't think it's possible to separate your own personal beliefs from that. Now, at the end of the day, this is what voters want to see. And if the government isn't delivering on it, actions speak louder than words. And the Tories can talk about crime, they can talk a good talk on it, but if they're not delivering and they're leaving people suffering at the hands of criminals, that they're not delivering justice, a decent criminal justice system, they're not delivering on that, then that has to come back to what they personally believe. Government is about making choices, and it's about putting funding and resources where you believe they should be they should be going. And that's the job of the Prime Minister, and in his previous role as Chancellor, he's had the biggest responsibility for that. Now, if he's not putting resources where they need to be going, then we can have an academic argument about or discussion about conviction rates, but at the end of the day, come back to what he personally believes. And if he's not putting the resources and carrying out the actions that need to take place to deliver the policies that people want from this, then you have to put it down to what he personally believes.
So, look, one of the things we've been talking about on the show today is the issue of racism within our politics, and everything from Suella Braverman's coming around British Pakistani men and grooming gangs. The topic of predominantly people from the South Asian community, but Muslims as well, specifically on Islamophobia, of child grooming has been a conspiracy that has been long running. Do you think it's responsible for the Labour Party to put out an ad that says the Prime Minister, the first Prime Minister of South Asian heritage, doesn't believe that people convicted of sexually assaulting children should go to prison in the wake of what is a widely shared conspiracy that people from the South Asian community, Muslims specifically, have an issue on this, have a problem on this issue?
I don't link the two together. I think it is absolutely right that whatever the background of the Prime Minister and ministers, that they should be held to account in the same robust way, regardless of their ethnic background. Absolutely agree with that. I think there's the challenge here is you're absolutely right that this widespread perception and belief that one particular community is responsible for child sexual exploitation. And yet, you know, all the figures published by the police and other agencies show that's not the case at all. And indeed, in the last week or so, we've seen two big cases come to court where there have been several or many, I think, well over a dozen people in the dock.
But surely, I mean, look, you
and none of them were from South Africa.
Gurinder, you say you don't associate the two things together. Unfortunately, there are too many people in the public who do, and so people like myself. We've been talking about it earlier. Every time I put out a tweet or put out something, I get the grooming gang stuff accused thrown at me underneath my tweet, and so the type of political discourse we have has an impact on the everyday lives of people in this country, and so. In the context where Suella Braverman is saying the disgusting things that she's saying, the Labour Party, who we have such a higher standard of, and the party that I have loved and been a part of, putting out something that associates the first Prime Minister from South Asian background to sexual assault of children is surely irresponsible.
Well, I don't see why. I mean, we still have to hold people to account.
Of course, look, we can hold people to account, but we don't have to say they personally don't believe that people who've been convicted of sexually assaulting children shouldn't go to prison. That's a personal position, the personal belief that the Prime Minister holds.
Well, like I said earlier, I don't think you can separate out his personal belief from the policies he's enacting. And, you know, the policies he's enacting, he's a Prime Minister, a previous Chancellor. He's had the most senior positions in the land and able to influence policy, resources and stuff. And if he's not putting those in manipulating those and making the choices and the decision to make sure that people who are convicted of adults who are convicted of sexual abuse against children are going to prison, then that has to be down to his personal beliefs. And
Can I jump in there? Because I think you make a really good point when, you know, you say actions speak louder than words and intent is not irrelevant. And honestly, do I think that conservative leaders care about protecting children from abuse? Not more than I think they care about protecting their positions in power. And I think that is proven by their actions. There's policies like the latest immigration law, which literally bars sex trafficking victims from from claiming modern slavery protections because they were brought into the country illegally. So, yeah, actions do say that this isn't a priority to them. But why pin this on Rishi Sunak's belief? Because we've, you know, what happens if, okay, this campaign comes to its full realization and Rishi Sunak is kicked out because everyone thinks that he doesn't care about protecting children from abuse? You know, we've seen more conservative leaders this last year than we've seen people entering King's Landing. Like, it is bloody Game of Thrones out there. And what does it actually achieve? Like, do you really think that a strategy like this will help to bring forward the necessary policy changes to actually address this issue? Like, will it help?
Well, no, you might expect me to say this, but I absolutely believe that the only way we're going to see any real policy change by electing a Labour government, and we can't have a general election soon enough.
But then aren't you saying that this is a political strategy, and maybe it's a justified political strategy in your eyes if you know it's necessary to bring in a Labour government in order to see change? But are you kind of admitting there that actually the goal of this campaign is just to oust the Conservative, you know, government? It doesn't really have integrity in the claims that it's making about Rishi Sunak. It's a political game.
Well, no, it's more than that. The entire purpose of the existence of the Labour Party is to win power in the country and to bring forward policies and change
at any price
in line with the values that we hold. And And as part of that, yes, there has to be political strategy, and you have to have robust conversation, and you have to also make sure that your message gets across to the electorate. And one thing that this campaign has certainly done is gotten this message across to the electorate in a way that other messages haven't in recent time.
Yeah. I can't disagree with that.
Yeah, and you know, it's a message that's resonating with voters, and voters, you know, do understand. They do understand. They do know what they want from their elected representatives, and they do expect them to deliver.
There's no doubt that the message has got out. Over 20 million people have seen the advert. I guess the question is from a moral perspective, how far are you willing to go to get that message out?
Yeah.
I remember when Boris Johnson made his comment about Muslim women, and we saw the rise in Islamophobia, not just online, but violence on the street. Gurinder, do you have no worries that the kind of people who are spreading this dangerous conspiracy theories around grooming gangs and sexual assault of white girls specifically, that target South Asian men and Muslims specifically, are you not worried this is going to have the same kind of impact? We've seen people attacked on the way home from mosques. If we have other instances like that, a rise in hate crimes, something like that happening, is that not going to sit on the conscience of the Labour Party?
Well, we haven't seen that. And normally, in the past, when there have been incidents, which...
This Ramadan specifically, we've seen a Muslim man attacked on his way home from a mosque.
Yeah, but not on the scale that on previous occasions when there have been incidents and things which have triggered a response, the rise in hate crime has been quite steep.
But the scale is irrelevant, Gurinder. One is too many.
Well, everyone is too many, but that's not, you know, the purpose of this campaign. I don't think you can conflate the two. I think there will be people who will use any opportunity to attack the Muslim community. There are people like that in our society, unfortunately, and every single thing that they can find, they will use that to attack the Muslim community. My approach to this is actually we need to be more robust and more forthcoming, and the media needs to be certainly helping on this, is to actually really put out the real figures and the real evidence about where the perpetrators of child sexual abuse and exploitation, who they really are. And actually, the more we can do on that, and probably, you know, the case in the last week absolutely demonstrates you got a large number of people in court for this kind of crime, and not a single one of them had brown skin. Or from an ethnic minority background, and yet that doesn't get the headlines, and that's what we do need to do.
This does get the headlines, and Labour, the people who designed this ad campaign, they did it because they know it does get the headlines, and it's this, there's this drip build up, this impression associating South Asian men with child molestation, and this actively, strategically plays on that in order to gain Labour a few points. I mean, I disagree.
I mean, the contradiction in what you guys are just saying there is, on the one hand, this is all targeted at the Muslim community, and it is. You know, that's where all the attacks go towards the Muslim community, and the people who would use this to attack the Muslim community are very specific in who they attack. And the fact that this is a Hindu prime minister or a prime minister of a Hindu background heritage, I think people understand the difference. But the point here is that isn't the basis on which the attack is happening.
Yeah.
People are going to attack the Muslim community. They're going to do that on any
unfortunately, I'm not. You know, good people will, but I'm not sure racists distinguish between Muslim, Sikh, and Hindu.
I think racists don't make that distinction.
Gurinder, unfortunately, we've run out of time. I'm really sorry. I do appreciate you coming on. I'm really appreciative that you've come and spoken to us. I'm sure you must have had a very busy day, so I'm grateful that you've made the time to speak to us. That was Gurinder Singh Johnson, member of the Labour National Executive Committee. Coming up next, we have Faria Ali, a trustee for the British Pakistani Foundation, who will talk to us about an open letter that was written to the Prime Minister calling for the Home Secretary to withdraw her remarks regarding British Pakistani men and grooming gangs. She will be joining us in the studio after this.
FUBAR Radio presents
Michael Payne and Marcel Somerville.
We've got a legend of Ealing, Andrew Levy from the Brand New Heavies. Hi guys.
What was it like working with Mr. Ronson?
It took me a year to realise that if I write him an email that's longer than 7 words, including not having my name underneath it or a hello on the top, he will never reply. So it took me
You worked out to the exact size of seven words. On.
7 words.
Where's the song?
That's brilliant.
Anytime soon?
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's fan club.
We're joined in the studio by Ingrid Oliver and we're discussing fart jokes. Our favourite fart jokes. If you've got any favourite fart jokes, by all means, write in to...
I've been a fan of. Hashtag
I've got a fart like, for you.
Yeah, considering I hate them, well, I'm really talking about them a lot.
I really hate acknowledging... Anyway.
So I saw a filmed insert with the band McFly and they're in like a limo or something chatting. And one of them farted, it just really made me laugh.
No.
I don't like a cartoon fart thing. I like a fart joke where it appears like someone shat themselves or something.
Oh, the shot.
Ian Boldsworth.
A perfect run-in that was to speak with Rob Schneider.
First time I ever heard the C word out loud. I mean, I knew that it existed.
Yeah.
Then when I was 13, my first trip to London, England, and like within 45 seconds of being in the country, I had heard the word about 90 times.
Yeah.
Somebody on a double-decker bus had taken somebody else's seat. Next thing you know, I said, you fucking cunt. You bloody cunt. You know, you are, you fucking cunt.
Yeah. Like...
Tuesday Takeover.
My name's Josh from The Skins. I'm joined by Holly Cook and Jamie Rodigan in the studio right now.
Yo, yo.
So, Holly, you were out with Kaiser Chiefs earlier. So that's an absolute mazza.
I can tell you that I don't think that Kaiser Chiefs fans really understand Holly Cook. But you've done supports as well. Sometimes it is just a bit weird.
Like, the bigger the band that you're opening up for, the harder it is. You open up for someone that's, like, in the charts and it's like, we have come to see this band.
Yeah, exactly. Their fans
We've
are
come to see this band.
Who the fuck
do you think you are?
You're listening to Fubar Radio.
Fubar Radio.
Fubar Radio.
Fubar Radio.
Fubar Radio. Fubar Radio.
Welcome back. This is Politics Uncensored. I am your host, Ali Milani, and I'm joined by my co-host this week, Matilda Melanson. And now we have Faria Ali, trustee for the British Pakistani Foundation. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We're talking specifically today about an open letter to the Prime Minister that has been written by the British Pakistani Foundation calling for the Home Secretary to withdraw her remarks regarding British Pakistani men and grooming gangs. Why don't you tell us a little bit about this open letter?
The open letter came about actually off the back of a number of conversations that each of the members of the British Pakistan Foundation's board have had with members of the community. And there's a real strength of feeling in terms of, first of all, that the comments are incorrect, but also, you know, even if there was some iota of truth to these, it's just not the approach that you'd expect from a responsible Home Secretary to put out comments which then create their own problems in terms of demonising and stigmatising an entire community. What you'd expect actually is comments which are more constructive, aimed at fixing the problem, rather than taking an entire community and scapegoating it in the way that the British Pakistani community feels it has been.
Yeah.
So the letters really came out of the strength of feeling of members of the British Pakistani community who are members of the British Pakistan Foundation, and there are 18,000 of them.
Yeah.
But also, I think, out of the strength of feeling personally that the trustees have around the comments that have been made.
I think what people might not realise is before Suella Braverman made this comment, those who aren't personally affected by it might not know, but there is an undercurrent that has been existent for years in this country of this conspiracy that British Pakistani men are targeting young white girls.
Yeah.
And Suella Braverman knows what she's doing when she makes the comments that she makes. Do you believe that with these comments and their record over the past 18 months or so, Suella Braverman, Rishi Sunak are mainstreaming what has been far-right, racist, conspiratorial views that previously had been locked away in the darkest sections of the internet?
Look, I don't know about the broader strategy here, but I've spent some time looking into this specific issue. And in this instance, yes, absolutely they are. It's not, you know, us putting this letter out there isn't going to mean that the Home Secretary is suddenly surprised that her comments are actually factually incorrect. There are reports from the Home Office which contradict what Suella Braverman
said. Well, she was quoted that in the interview as That's she right. was making the comments.
That's right. So the fact that these comments are being made is not because she's not aware of what the facts are. There's something else going on here. And to my mind, actually, that is around distracting from the real issue. Because there are 500,000 children in the UK who get sexually abused every year. And that, in some part, is down to the fact that there have been all of these cuts which have been made by the Conservative government, which mean that actually these victims, first of all, don't get the support that they need when they might flag that there's an issue going on, but also don't get the support that they need and deserve, you know, once actually the crime is uncovered. That obviously is a very inflammatory issue. And one way of dealing with it is just to distract from it by using another community as a scapegoat. What I'd quickly add on that is doing that is repeating mistakes of the past, because there's been plenty of instances before where you take a problem that deserves nuance, evidence, qualification. You oversimplify it, you put the blame at the door of, you know, an entire community, and suddenly it's serving or being punished for the mistakes of a couple within that community.
Do you think that this, what kind of impacts do you think this has, real world impacts on the British Pakistani community, these comments?
I can talk to you about myself personally.
Yeah.
So I think as a British Pakistani, it makes me feel exposed, it makes me feel vulnerable, fearful even. So I'm a corporate lawyer by day. I don't follow the ins and outs and the ups and downs of politics. But for me, something like this is something that I have to come out and you know, voice my concern and disappointment over, because I feel all of the things that I've just described. I'm fearful for my loved ones, my brother, my father, my husband, because these are all men who are now the face of this crime.
That's one thing in today's show I think we've been, myself and Matilda, have been speaking about, is real world impacts.
Yeah.
So the worry is that, you know, I have friends, family members, and I've seen online people telling their dads, their granddads, don't walk home from the masjid, to from the mosque, by yourself at night, because of these comments have inflamed, you know, what might be a rise in political violence.
Yeah, and it's so good that here on Politics Uncensored you're doing that and you're platforming this firsthand lived experiences, because I'm not really seeing that happen in the media, and this is a chronic problem. Actually, on MediaStorm, our second episode that we ever did, it was on anti-Asian hate in the UK. It's my co-host Helena Wadia's part of the South Asian British community, and what we would see this problem with all the media coverage of these issues. It never includes the voices of the people who actually have to deal with the fallout. Voices like, you know, like you were just saying, I can speak from personal experience. Mm-hmm. But what the media does is and politicians have learned this, is the more hateful, the more viral, and the more controversial the comment they say, the more traction it gets. You know, even if a headline is saying, oh, you know, Suella Braverman criticized for saying this comment, that comment is still getting circulated in the headlines. And I wonder whether you place any blame with the British media. I don't think that the media has learnt to report on problematic statements without just amplifying them.
There is some blame to lay at the door of the media on this, because I think for me, the problem around all of this, the broader sort of hateful rhetoric, whether it comes from the Home Secretary or whether it comes from the media sort of giving traction to that and amplifying it, is, you know, it goes back to the point I made earlier. We're just not learning from past mistakes. These are not comments made in a vacuum where somebody, you know, says something slightly irresponsibly and it stops there. These have real world damaging consequences. There are countless examples, both here in the UK and further afield, of this ethnicity narrative, which has been perpetuated by the Home Secretary's comments, leading to concrete, violent hate crime. So there was an example of an 81-year-old gentleman somewhere in Sheffield who, shortly after the incident in Rotherham, was murdered. And he was murdered, you know, because whoever did it was upset about what had happened in Rotherham with those specific individuals and chose to take his anger out on somebody completely innocent. That's here in the UK.
Yeah.
Similarly, you go to somewhere like New Zealand, the massacre that happened in Christchurch there a number of years ago, the gunman's ammunition had "For Rotherham" written on it. So, you know, it's not like these comments are made and, you know, it stops there. It doesn't. has real world consequences.
Mm. Yeah.
For people, you know, that somebody loves.
And it's not founded in fact, it's founded in fiction. It's founded in a complete distortion of the truth.
And the politicians know what they're doing. And this is the bit that I find really gets to me emotionally, is because of their incompetence in government, they're now plunging the country further and further right, down into the depths of racism and sexism and misogyny in everything that they've been saying, particularly in the last 6 months, just so they can cling to power. I mean, you spoke specifically in the earlier interview about this isn't about conviction rates or anything like that. It's about them holding on to power, and they know what they're doing. Faria, last question I have for you is, you've written this open letter. I'm not going to hold my breath and assume that the Prime Minister has gotten back to you. Mm. What do you think the appropriate steps would be? Should Rishi Sunak sack the Home Secretary for her comments?
Look, I think the comments are part of something broader, and the Home Secretary's ability to deal with what her mandate is. But on this specific issue, what we would like is either for the comments to be substantiated, which for good reason we don't think they can be, or for the comments to be withdrawn and for there to be an apology. And more importantly, in some senses than that, what we need is engagement with the British Pakistani community on these issues, because if we're going to live, or if we are attempting to continue living in a multicultural, healthy society, what you can't have is elements or pockets within that feeling either overlooked or, worse, actively targeted. And so there needs to be something done to retract those comments, at the very least, from the Prime Minister, if he can't have the comments retracted, for himself. To distance himself from the comments that have been made.
Okay. Thank you so much. That was Faria Ali, trustee for the British Pakistani Foundation. The British Pakistani Foundation have written an open letter to the Prime Minister on the Home Secretary's comments, and you can find that online. Earlier today, I spoke to Tom O'Grady, an associate professor of political science at the University of College London. I asked Tom what his views were on how Labour and the Tories have been seemingly having a race to the bottom with their campaign, from Suella Braverman's comments to Labour's ad campaign.
Well, I think, like most people involved in analysing politics, I found both sets of comments very depressing. I think a race to the bottom is the right word. I mean, I think the Starmer ad, if I can start with that one, is kind of depressing on three levels. It's depressing, first of all, because the claim made in the advert is just factually inaccurate and silly. I don't think anyone really believes that Rishi Sunak is actually against imprisoning people for a child sexual assault. So the claim itself is silly and it's cheap. Second of all, I think it distracts from the actual argument that Labour could be making, which is about austerity, cuts to policing, the fact that large amounts of crime has effectively been decriminalised in this country. We're actually doing a very bad job at tackling crime. So there's an argument to be made there, but they're not making, that could be linked to austerity. And I think third of all, it just massively undercuts what is Keir Starmer's selling point, which is about integrity in the wake of Partygate and so on. So I think it's bad politics as well as being very cheap. Mm-hmm. And then on the Suella Braverman comments, I mean, once again, wildly factually inaccurate. All measures of this type of crime suggest that there's not a disproportionate amount of child sex abuse being done by ethnic minorities. And the idea that, like, the British police, who, if they're anything, are probably somewhat institutionally racist, are not going to tackle this kind of crime, just, again, seems cheap and silly. So I think both points, a race to the bottom, is the right way to describe it. I think both sets of comments are aimed at capturing or recapturing the kind of socially conservative, working class, white, red wall voters in the last election. And the story of 2019 was really that the Conservatives managed to capture a whole lot of those voters in exactly the right places at the right time with the Brexit message, and that won them the election. And they want to get that group back, and they're doing it with socially authoritarian messaging. Those voters are a bit more socially authoritarian. At exactly the same time, Labour, I think, is very afraid that that group, who currently say to pollsters either, I'm not sure who I'm going to vote for, or I'm kind of thinking about Labour, Labour are afraid that that group are going to shift back to the Conservatives, and they think that they have to capture that same group by using the same discourse.
Do you think Labour are at risk of losing? So by reaching to that demographic or that group of voters who they perceive as liking this kind of messaging, I assume that's what the perception is, Do you think they're at risk of losing some of their more traditional voter bases who might not want to see this kind of campaigning?
Yeah, I mean, I think what Labour needs to do is hold together a coalition of kind of often young, ethnically diverse urban voters in places like London, Manchester, etc., and the coalition they need to regain or move into in places like the north of England, but also Wales and Scotland, where in certain places people are more authoritarian. So yeah, there's a real risk that some of the voters, some of them more ethnically diverse left-wing voters just stay at home. And I think there's also a bigger risk, which is that an election that's fought on crime, who can be more authoritarian than whom, is an election that Labour doesn't want to fight and shouldn't try to fight, because an election where you're trying to out-authoritarian Suella Braverman, like, to me just doesn't seem like a sensible election strategy for Labour. And I think the more Labour spends, the more time Labour spends talking about those issues, the more danger is that they play into exactly what the Conservatives want, which is an election basically fought over the same types of issues that 2019 was fought over, like Brexit. I think what Labour should be doing is trying to move on to austerity, the economy, addressing the cost of living, which can be linked to crime, as I've talked about, but can be linked perhaps in cleverer ways, I think.
I remember the Hillary Clinton campaign against Donald Trump, and the worry then and some of the criticisms that then were that she was picking fights on issues that Trump was just going to go further than her on, and she couldn't win those fights. And the worry is exactly like you're saying for Labour. If you pick fights in the way that you're doing, you're never going to out, like you say, authoritarian Suella Braverman. And surely, you know, there are so many issues that Labour could pick on, like the NHS, like housing, all these issues. Why are they going for this one? Is it just purely, you know, there must be some focus group somewhere that's telling them that this is the issues that maybe people in the North or maybe some of the don't knows, like you said, are interested in or passionate about? What's the political reasoning here?
I mean, it's always difficult to get into the minds of politicians and their aides, but I think that they are genuinely convinced that they have to capture this group of more white, working class, social authoritarian voters in certain areas, and that they can't do that just by talking about the economy or just by talking about housing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I have to think that's wrong.
Is there any evidence? Because there's this constant conversation that the white working class northern voters are maybe more socially conservative, maybe are more authoritarianism on issues like policing and immigration, things like that. Is there any evidence to support that?
Yeah, I think that is broadly true. I don't think that's wrong. It doesn't mean that you're going to win an election by trying to be more authoritarian than the Conservatives on crime and law and order. I just think that's an election you're going to lose in exactly the same way that Hillary Clinton was going to lose by trying to be, you know, tougher than Trump on immigration or something like that. Labour's going to win an election that's focused on, you've had 13 years and what have you done? The country's falling apart, you can't get a doctor's appointment, et cetera, et cetera. You know, that's the election that I think they should be trying to run. And I personally think it's poor politics, what they're doing at the moment.
So let's bring this back to the real life examples, because often I think politics is contained either on the Sunday morning programs or on Twitter. But the things that we put out, the things that politicians say have impact in the quote unquote real world. We have seen two MPs murdered in recent years. We have seen, you know, I think people from the South Asian communities attacked and murdered on the way back from mosques, for example. And we've seen a rise in political violence in the country. Every time we see these sparks in violence, there is consensus across the political board that we need to lower the temperature, we need to watch our discourse, and then we forget it in a couple of years and go right back to the dirty politics that has caused the context in which political violence, it's certainly been a variable in the rise in political violence. Is that a concern, you think, the real world impacts of ads like this, comments like Suella Braverman's?
Yeah, I do. And I think there's a broader point here, which is that an election that's fought on things like immigration or on moral issues is an election where it's very hard to kind of compromise or to talk about degrees or to talk about, we can give you a little bit of what you want, but not everything you want. You're kind of, you know, you're kind of either for the death penalty or you're not for the death penalty. You're for really tough sentences or you're not for really tough sentences. It's hard to reach moral compromise in the same way that you can compromise by maybe saying, well, maybe we won't raise taxes by as much as you want, but we'll raise them by a little bit and we can meet somewhere in the middle. It's much harder to meet in the middle on moral issues. And so there is just a more inflammatory nature to these political issues that I think does make them more dangerous. And Brexit as well, is, you know, with what happened during that campaign, there really are deep sort of moral intuitions that people have about these that get in the way, I think, of a more reasoned discourse. Yeah. So yeah, I think there absolutely is a danger with this.
So you're pretty non-partisan. I mean, I'm sure you have your political positions, but you're not strictly party political. If you had both party leaderships listening to you right now and you had one call to them on this issue of dirty politics, what would you say to them?
Gosh, that's a good question. I just think, remember that what you say has more influence than you might think on the public. Like, the public doesn't think about politics very much from day to day, to be perfectly honest. People don't talk about politics as much in their daily lives as people like you and me. And what you say matters. And, you know, you have a choice about whether to conduct yourselves with integrity and decency or not. And, you know, I think history will remember Boris Johnson as someone who had an 80-seat majority and won an election and then completely screwed it up by really immoral behavior in Partygate. And again, you have the same choice. Keir Starmer has that choice right now. Do you go for the Keir Starmer who's a man of integrity, who is much more moral than Boris Johnson, et cetera, or do you go for the sort of bizarre Keir Starmer we saw this week, who's willing to endorse this silly, cheap political ad? I just think that you have a choice about what kind of politician you want to be, and I would say make that choice.
Excellent. Thank you so much. That was Tom O'Grady, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of College London. Thank you so much for joining us, Tom. So we've had a live text from a Labour Party member who's listening in live. Andrew Smith has said, "What disgusts me most is that we have two MPs murdered in recent years and they're fueling racism and hate simply for votes. It's abhorrent." Matilda, what would you say about this? They have a choice to make. You know, politicians have a choice to make about what kind of politician they want to be, what kind of discourse they endorse in the country, and what kind of society they build as part of that.
Yeah, it's a great... It's a great question, because you would like to think that people who go into political leadership, at least some people who go into political leadership, do it because they want to make things better, they want to make change, and they see that as a vehicle to do that. Obviously, there are also going to be people who go into politics because they like power and they want to get into places of power. And the question being, oh, what kind of politician do you want to be? But it makes me wonder, how free are politicians to make that choice? You know, does the blame lie with politicians who fail to make the right choice, or does it lie with the system that rewards politicians who have bad motivations? You know, do politicians that have principles that are there for their constituents, that want to take moral leadership and say things that are countering harmful comments, even if they may not be the sexy thing to say, you know, who want to actually have a backbone when it comes to moral leadership, you know, will they ever get off the backbenches?
Unfortunately, it's an issue of talent. So, and the fact that they don't have the talent, they just need to reflect the very worst things that they hear back from the focus groups. We reached out to the community. So as we do most weeks, we went out onto the streets and asked our general public one question. If there was a general election tomorrow, who would you vote for?
I would reluctantly actually vote for the Conservatives. They're the least antagonising, annoying and disjointed party. The others, especially the Labour Party, just want to be as bitchy as anything.
Yeah, I'd vote for Labour, more because they represent our demographic a lot better. Conservatives sort of present a more capitalist-driven economy, which sort of represents them a lot better, and it creates, like, a precedent for, like, not helping the lower classes and people with less fortunate ability to rise up through those ranks. It sort of creates a segregated society. And in voting for Labour, doing so, hoping that the ideology that's perpetuated changes.
Conservative, because you can't fight for Keir Starmer because he's just politically incorrect.
Yeah, Conservative, because just I think they've got a better plan, as it were.
Keir Starmer and the Labour Party. I just feel like the Tories have had too long of a reign, and I think we're ready for a fresh perspective here.
Anyone but Starmer.
Yeah, I'd vote Labour because the Tories are scumbags, and I just want to get them out and get back to normal.
Labour. Because I'm sick of this government.
Conservatives.
I'd vote Labour, but I think really it boils down to just looking at the events that have transpired over the past 6 years. I just can't see how so many like fuck-ups within the Conservative Party can lead to people not voting Labour. I think people just need to give them a chance, see how it goes, and then you can reevaluate after that.
Green, because the rest is shit.
Matilda, very quickly, in 30 seconds, your reaction to that. That was a bit more balanced than I thought. I thought we'd get more Labour. That was North London.
Interesting, and maybe that's why Starmer's taking this radical new tack. Maybe Labour are scared. Maybe we need to listen to this like strategy change. I think it's very interesting that someone thought the Conservatives were the least bitchy and factional party of the choices. Maybe Sunak has done a better job than predicted at uniting the party after the chaos.
Our focus group here on Fubar Radio Politics Uncensored has found that the Labour are too bitchy and Conservatives are scumbags. There you have it. Breaking news. Thank you so much, Matilda, for joining us on what's been an amazing episode. We've been able to talk about some really, really important issues. I want to thank all of our guests, Gurinder Singh Josan from the Labour NEC and Chair of Hope Not Hate, Faria Ali, Trustee of the British Pakistani Foundation, and of course, Tom O'Grady, Associate Professor of Political Science at UCL. Thank you all for listening and joining us. You can follow us on Fubar Radio and at Politics Uncensored on Instagram, and I'm on Twitter. Salams.